I'm just back from Indianapolis and my first General Assembly of the Disciples of Christ. I went with an open mind and heart, ready to see what God had in mind for Park Street as disciples. I was not disappointed. In fact, the Spirit blowing through that event blew me away. I left feeling deeply convicted of who we are and who we are to become as we take a role in the Charlottesville Kingdom Building Network, empowered by audacious faith. That was a topic of a keynote speaker I heard. In a couple of weeks, I will share with you a lot more, but today we will continue to tap into the good work and word found in Christine Pohl's book, which addresses sustaining practices of Christian community entitled Living into Community. The four practices are gratitude, promise-keeping, truth-telling, and hospitality or welcome. Last week, we finished our two-week discussion regarding promise-keeping. This week, we will begin to take a look at the practice of truth-telling, which Pohl states falls strategically on the heels of promise-keeping, knowing without one you can't truly have the other. Both require integrity and fidelity. Truth-telling is often considered a hallmark or highly valued practice of most communities. It is a bond to help our systems function. My word is my bond kind of thing. Think of our court systems. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God, with hand on Bible, which I just found out from my criminal defense attorney husband that you don't say, so help me God, and you don't put your hand on a Bible anymore. Oh well. Anyway, when we're asked those questions, we say, I do. We hold up truth tellers as the ultimate examples of living with integrity. Abe Lincoln, the face on the penny, was the manager of a country store, noticing he didn't give back enough change one day, goes out of his way to reconcile the mistake. This, among many other acts of integrity, got him the name Honest Abe. Golly, we love and revere truth so much and value it so much that we even make up stories about leaders we hold in such esteem. Think about what I just said. Like George Washington's, I cannot tell a lie. Did you know that the cherry tree story is a fictitious myth? It was first created by a pastor, no less, who was writing George's biography. Mason Locke Weems created the story of George and the cherry tree to embody Washington's honesty. And it became so much a part of the American folklore that later another pastor, William Holmes McGuffey, composed a series of grammar school books with the cherry tree story as a rock bed. By 1830, the myth was anchored in our American culture. It's hard not to think of it when walking under cherry blossoms in the Tidal Basin in D.C., just west of this monument. Yes, indeed, truth-telling is said to be highly valued, but it also might be one of the rarest qualities around. We are raised to be, especially in the South, polite and kind versus honest, bless your heart. In fact, telling fibs or little white lies is often excused as being harmless. By the way things are going these days, those little white lies just seem to be oxymoronic. I mean, wouldn't you agree that as easy as it is to say that honesty is the best policy, we often work very, very hard to dance around it like it's an ogre in the room? Why? Because we are so duplicitous. So much so that an even more common phrase is, don't judge a book by its cover, knowing it is wise to instead maybe judge it by the words found inside or the fingerprints found on its pages. How many of those cliches about truth can I use today? But, oh, actions do speak louder than words. Because sadly, folks, words have often been used for facade and manipulation. Pie crust promises, the great philosopher Mary Poppins says, easily made, easily broken. Why? For Christine Pohl, living truthfully is difficult because human beings are fallible, finite, and diverse. Our efforts at truthfulness can be complicated and sometimes misguided. Even when our intentions are good, things do not necessarily go smoothly. Our perspectives and understandings are incomplete, and we live between the recognitions of our limitations and the gift of God's unfailing truth. We have a hard time believing that God's promises and proclamations of care of creation and creatures is, well, can we really trust God? I mean, we have such a hard time living truthfully. Weren't we created in God's image? Often. Instead, we work from a place of fear, not faith. And that, my friends, is detrimental to our ability to be truth-tellers. Fear of losing faith, limb, life, Lamborghini. We fear losing and risking safety and security of any kind. It is a global, personal, and even ancient problem. Wherever humans show up, there's a good chance that a lie or two will enter the room. I'm sure you've got a story or two. Now, here's one of mine. I think it's kind of funny. When my older children were younger, that would be Matthew, Zachary, and Morgan. Max was still in diapers at the time. We were really strict about the kids finishing their dinner. Basically, no dessert kind of consequence, not waterboarding or anything. But no gooey lava cake if peas were left on your plate. Anyway, Morgan was about 8, and I left the table for one reason or another and went down towards my bedroom or something, and when I returned to the table, miraculously, Morgan, who'd been struggling with the peas and chicken or whatever it was that she was eating, had finished. I mean, she cleaned her plate. I said, "Wow, Morgan, you finished already?" And I started to head to the kitchen to get myself some more food, and Morgan dashed in front of me, threw herself in front of this large trash can that had a lid on it, and said with her arms out, "Don't look in there." Poor thing. Of course I looked in there and saw the pile of food that she had scraped off of her plate. Now that's a funny tale of Mo, but it reveals a great truth. We all struggle to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, and it begins at an early age, which certainly puts our diligent integrity and honesty at a risk. Truth-telling must be taught and encouraged by not only our spoken direction, but our example. When we start allowing even the littlest lie to slide, even if it is kind of cute and makes us laugh, we can easily slip right into a culture of untruth. Have you turned on the news lately? What will history books say about what we're drowning in now? I don't know, but I do know that history does in time reveal the whole truth if we are willing to listen, look, and learn from it, working diligently to break the cycle of deception. Yes, the truth will set you free, and that comes not from the lips of Martin Luther King, but from the lips of Christ in John's 8th chapter. Through acts of living with honesty and integrity, we can leave a legacy that is as shiny as Abe's copper penny and as fruitful as Washington's mythological tree. Oh, but when we lie and spin tales and distort the truth, whoa, it's not only one's integrity at risk, but our lives. Ask old Abe himself. No, not honest Abe, but dishonest Abe. You know from the book of Genesis? Talk about a legacy of familial fib fabrication. We've spent a lot of time with Abe and his family over the past few weeks, Sarah, Isaac, Hagar, Ishmael, and of course that devoted servant who we will call Phil. Abe and Sarah, the forefather and mother of our Judeo-Christian heritage, oh, they were absolutely perfect. Hardly. I mean, sure, on a good day they could be faithful and trusting. But on a bad day, and they had many, how easily they lost their posture of gratitude and bad decisions were made. So today, we're going to examine generational systemic dishonesty. Doesn't that sound fun? So here we go with a radically edited summation of a lengthy tale of an overview of the father of the stars, Abraham and family. We left off last week with his son Isaac marrying a beauty, Rebecca. Like his father, like son, as Sarah was supposed to have been a real knockout too. Women that men would die for. No, I should say, would lie for. Back before Isaac was an apple in his daddy's eye, Abe and company, per God's instruction, were primarily nomadic. It is said during their journey a great famine hit, and it was just about that time that Abram reached Egypt. New place, new fears. And he said to his wife Sarai, "Look, we both know that you're a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they're going to say, 'Aha, that's his wife,' and kill me. But they'll let you live. Do me a favor. Tell them you're my sister." Abe was right about the Egyptians. They took one look at her and took her to Pharaoh. No harm came to Abram. In fact, because of her new digs and dude, that brother of hers, Abram got along very well. He accumulated loads of livestock and servants, and Phil, of course. But God wasn't happy in it, and is said to have punished not Abram, but Pharaoh. Everybody in the palace got seriously sick, and it was revealed that Sarai, the beauty, was Abram's wife. You can imagine how Pharaoh felt. Flu-like, I guess, but also pretty angry. And he brought Abe in, asking, "What is this that you've done to me? Why didn't you tell me that she's your wife? Why did you say she's my sister? So I could take her as my wife. Here's your wife back. Take her and get out." Now, wow, what a close call. I imagine he'd never do something that stupid again, right? Oh, hold on to your camels and get ready for Dishonest Abe Part 2. Some 12 chapters later, post-name change, we find our nomad rolling into Gerar, and King Abimelech took one look at Sarah, and you guessed it, took her for himself, being told that, again, Sarah was Abraham's sister. God, via dream, revealed her identity to the king, and again, Abe was called on the carpet by an angry ruler, and as always, Abram's excuse for the lie was, "I was scared." In both cases, Abraham's fear got the best of him, and he chose dishonesty over faith in God's provision. What a hot mess, which you won't be surprised gets even hotter. Next up to bat, son Isaac. So it goes that there was a time of hunger in the land. Sound familiar? Isaac and his gorgeous wife Rebecca were nomading into Gerar. Yes, the same Gerar as did his father, where if they stayed, God had promised to bless and protect them. But as soon as King Abimelech, it's a popular name with royalty, saw Rebecca, I swear this is like the movie Groundhog's Day, and inquired about her, Isaac told him, you guessed it, Rebecca was his sister. Why? Because he was afraid. The jig was up when the king looked out of his window one day and saw the quote-unquote brother and sister fooling around. Just like his dad, when called on the carpet and asked why he lied, his response, I was scared. You can't miss the generational fib factory, all initiated from a place of not faith but fear. Didn't they remember that the kids were watching and learning how to operate? In this case, using deception as their go-to troubleshooter? The next generation wasn't any better. Please, take some time and read the story of Rebecca and Isaac's twin boys, Jacob and Esau. Their story is the best worst one yet. Now, folks, all of this documented deception isn't to teach us it's okay to lie, to learn just how devastating lies can be to a community. To tell yourself that lies don't matter, that truth-telling isn't essential to building a trusting community, well, you'd be lying to yourself. You can't just say that you're telling the truth. You must tell the truth. As a faith community, especially, truth-telling has to be a core value if we're to build a life together. We can't just say we are grateful, committed, promise-keeping, compassionate, and welcoming. We must live lives that consistently reveal this as our truth. And folks, this can only happen when we work out of faith, not fear. When fear is our foundation and we face challenges, shoot, our health as a body vanishes at the first sign of trouble. And like dishonest Abe, we'll leave a trail of deception. However, if our foundation is faith, we'll be a lot more like honest Abe, leaving a trail of blessings like pennies from heaven. Because we swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help us, God.